Actors Talk Podcast, Episode 32. Welcome, everyone, to episode 32 of Actors Talk Podcast. My name is Tommy G. Kendrick. I am the producer and host of our little get-together here. Thank you so much for joining us once again. If this is indeed your first time here with us at Actors Talk Podcast, thank you so very much. I want you to know that we are rapidly approaching 100,000 total downloads in just over a year for the podcast, and it's all, of course, due to you, the listeners. I'm not downloading the podcast that many times. It's you folks. Thank you. I really, really do appreciate it. We've had listeners in, I think, 110 or 111 countries around the world, and it's just fantastic. Thank you so very much. This episode of Actors Talk Podcast is brought to you by Kiwai 100% True New Zealand Spring Water. You can find out more about Kiwai Water at kiwai.com. That's K-I-W-A-I-I.com. Or you can watch a video right on the ActorsTalkPodcast.com website. Terrific product. I love it. I drink it. I believe in it. Do me a favor. Go to their website. Click that Contact Us tab at the top of their page. Drop them a little note and let them know that you heard about Kiwai 100% True New Zealand Spring Water right here on Actors Talk Podcast. Tonight's guest interview is with an actor named Jay Hughley. Jay Hughley is someone that, if you don't know the name, you definitely are going to know the face. He's a terrific actor. He's been in many, many, many episodic television shows as both a guest star and a recurring character, a regular character. You know him from Brothers and Sisters. And a lot of you, I'm hoping, know him from his work on Treme, because that's what we're going to be spending a good bit of time talking about tonight, is his work on this terrific HBO show, Treme. If you don't know Treme, you need to find a way, subscribe to HBO through your cable provider, whatever. It is a terrific show. Man, what a wonderful show. We'll be talking some behind-the-scenes info on Treme tonight with Jay Hughley. We'll also be talking about a new film he has coming out later in the year called 12 Years a Slave, which is a fascinating project as well. Well, that's enough setup about what we talk about. We also talk about some things that are going to be of great interest to all of you actors, wherever you are on the journey, if you're beginning or if you've been on the journey a little bit or a long time like myself. I think you'll find the conversation about Jay's actor's journey to be very, very interesting indeed. So let's get right to that interview with Mr. Jay Hughley. Very cool.
Where are you, Tommy?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And you're right now in L.A., the L.A. area?
Yep. Yeah.
How long have you lived there?
I have lived here since 1996, about. I came out once to do a play earlier than that, but permanently since about 96.
You got to L.A. just shortly after I left. I was there from 79 until 94.
Is that right?
And yeah, you were not there for the Northridge earthquake, but we were.
I came to do a play right after that happened.
I want to talk about the projects that you're involved in, but I want to try and get a little bit of information that will be helpful to actors and other creatives in the business who can learn something from your particular journey. I hope you're up for that. Nothing prying, but just, you know, you have a good story, and I'd like to get into that a little bit if you're up for that.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like that's the only thing I really am qualified to talk about.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your background. I know you were born in New Jersey. Is that correct? And you grew up there, I guess?
I grew up in Tenafly, New Jersey, which is this beautiful green suburb right outside Manhattan, right over the George Washington Bridge. For a little kid who wanted to be an actor, it was a great place to grow up because, you know, right over the bridge is Broadway. So my parents would take me, you know, every birthday and Christmas to see Broadway plays. And so all those first plays I saw were, you know, the best.
Well, that was my question really going to be, when did the desire or the inclination to become an actor, did that come at an early age? It seems to have.
You know, I mean, I think that I was very aware of theater and movies at a young age, but it was very, you know, separate from what I thought I could possibly do with my life. You know, I didn't know any actors. I didn't grow up in a theatrical family. So I would go see these plays and think, God, they were just mesmerizing. But I didn't have a moment where I went, oh, I could do that until college, I would say.
Okay.
And the first sort of major play I did in college was The Glass Menagerie. And I remember walking home from a performance thinking, uh-oh, you know, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So that was, I think it was college before I really thought that I want to be an actor.
Right. Now, according to your bio, your entree into the business, really, at least from what I've read, may have been in the modeling end of the business. In college, were you already doing some modeling, or did that come after college?
Yeah, no, I started modeling in high school. And so I went to a boarding school in Princeton, New Jersey, and on weekends I would go into New York and do catalogs and things like that. That was a really cool job for a while. Whether or not that got me into acting, I'm not quite sure. I mean, it certainly got me into commercials and things like that, but that still sort of felt very separate from plays and, you know, television and movies.
There was a stigma toward modeling at one time, and maybe there still is, in terms of acting. People would assume that, oh, this person, whether it's a male or a female, they're a model, they're not an actor. Did you have to fight against any of that when you transitioned into professional acting from modeling?
Well, I mean, I think I'm, you know, I didn't tell anybody that I was a model to start out with. And I think I started studying acting pretty young. So I would say that I was an acting student before I said that I was a model. But there is that stigma. You know, I mean, I think the business is full of pretty people who can memorize lines. And there is a stigma against that. But, you know, there are absolutely the exceptions to those rules. I mean, you look at someone like, the first example I can think of is Jessica Lange, who she was just a model when she got the part in King Kong in the 70s. And then she went back to the drawing board. You know, the reviews were pretty brutal to her, but then went back to the drawing board and studied with Sandra Seacat and, you know, just really rolled up her sleeves and learned the craft, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just interesting. Everybody has a different path in the business. And, you know, I guess that's what makes it so difficult in a way. I get a fair number of questions, often from people beginning in the business or thinking of beginning the business, or from their parents or something, asking for some sort of guidance and a roadmap. And the truth is, there is no one particular roadmap. Everyone sort of finds their own way. There's some things to do and some things not to do, of course, but that's one of the things about the business that I guess can make it difficult, is everybody has a different entree into the business and a different way that they've made their success along the way.
Absolutely. You know, I talk to young actors sometimes and I always say, just study, 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 get into an acting class, figure out if you like it. You know, figure out if you like the actual work, because it's mostly that. It's a lot of auditioning. It's a lot of trying to get a job, but it's also a lot of work. And if you don't enjoy the work part of it, you know, I do think that a lot of people get into the business in hopes of, you know, finding fame and fortune. And that's just barely ever happens.
Yeah.
So I think you really have to enjoy the acting part.
Yeah, it really is. I did an interview, well, it's almost a year ago, with a terrific actor. I don't know if you know him. His name's Marcus Flanagan, but he also he's a teacher in LA as well. And he's had a pretty successful career, very successful career by my terms. And he also has a terrific book called One Less Bitter Actor. And it is a great book, and it's one that I really always recommend when I get emails or voicemails from somebody saying, hey, I'm just starting in the business, can you give me any clues? And the first thing I'll say is, go buy this book, because if I had had this book 30-something years ago when I started, I would have a lot fewer bruises on me than I have now, and because there are a lot of lessons I had to learn the hard way that are right here. And and he really alludes to some of what you were just talking about, the work, and especially even with regards to auditioning. You know, we actors tend to give away their power, as it were, in auditions, often by trying to figure out what people want instead of concentrating on the work. and doing that.
You know, I feel like I'm finally, after all these years, mastering that, because, you know, it's such an instinct to go in there and hope that you're what they want and try to shape yourself into something that you might think that they're looking for. And when the truth is, you just got to go in there and be who you are.
Right.
And that's what's, you know, being who you are is what sets you apart from everybody else.
Exactly. You know, Marcus and I also talked about mentorship and how difficult it is in this business to find a mentor. Oh, and part of that's because there's so much insecurity in the business, you know.
Sure.
But did you have someone along the way that you look back and say, you know, this person really mentored me. They helped me along the way. They're the person
sure
that I look to.
I sure did. You know, I had an acting teacher, Milton Katselis. He was the best. You know, he's one of these guys. I started studying with him in the mid-90s, and it's been a few years since he's passed away, but I think about him absolutely every day. He was one of those people that just believed in me, and he believed in me as an artist. He believed in me as an actor and pushed me really hard. And the idea, he was really big on having a good attitude as an actor, because it's a long career, you know, and there's a million reasons to blame something why you're not working.
Yeah.
And while you're doing that, someone else is getting the job.
Right.
You know, you can say there's not enough roles for women, not enough roles for men, not enough roles for people my age, not enough roles. But at the end of the day, you just got to keep doing what you're doing and push forward and work and get better. And, you know, because while you're complaining, someone else is in the room getting in the job.
Yeah, exactly. Was there a time after you started acting and started working when you came to some sort of a realization that, hey, I'm getting it. You know, I'm not there, but I'm getting it, and I really know I can do this, and I'm raising my game. Did you ever have some kind of a moment like that on a particular job or a role you were working on?
I think every few years I have a little bit of that feeling. And I think, you know, I still go to acting class every Saturday. I feel like you're never done. You know, a painter doesn't stop painting, or, you know, I think every few years I have the feeling that I'm getting another little piece of this. I'm progressing here. I'm getting a little bit better each year. And I think that's it's a noble cause, you know. I mean, I just saw this movie Amour last night. I don't know if you've seen it. It's
I have not. Yeah.
Nominated for Best Picture, and the woman in it is 86. She's, you know, been making movies since the 50s, and boy, she's nominated for Best Actress, and that performance is you just can't believe what you're seeing. And after the movie, I thought, you know, here's a woman that's really devoted her whole life to just to acting, to the craft, and to getting a little bit better each year, and boy, does it pay off.
You know, and that's a great thing about acting. I mean, we tend to sometimes focus on the negative things, the rejection and the bumpy road, and, you know, how difficult it is. But one of the great things about acting is there's really no age limit. As long as you still have the mental faculties to memorize lines and work on a character, work on a scene, there's still acting. There's still work to be done. You're not
Absolutely.
Cut off at you don't have to retire at 65.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you saw the other night on, I think it was 60 Minutes, Maggie Smith was interviewed. You know, she's on Downton Abbey now. And she,
yeah.
The interviewer said, you ever think about retiring? And she said, oh, I think that moment is past. And I love that, because, you know, I think she's saying if she was going to retire, she would have done it a while ago.
So, yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, there's the 95-year-old ex-judge I'll be playing someday, hopefully.
There you go. Hey, talk a little bit, if you will, because you've had a varied career and a lot of credits, and I'll have links to your IMDb page and that sort of thing in the show notes so folks can go and look at that. But you've done a tremendous amount of work. And for the actors out there, maybe those who are beginning or not, I think it's interesting no matter where the person is on their journey. Talk, if you will, a bit about the difference in coming into a show as maybe a guest actor on an episode and being a recurring or a regular actor on the show.
Yeah.
How are those things different, and how do they impact the actor and what they have to do?
Yeah, I did this show Brothers and Sisters on ABC, and that I did the pilot, And so I came in right at the beginning. So we're all sort of on the same footing. But if you're coming in the second year or third year on a show as a recurring character, or if you're just coming in for one episode somewhere along the way, it's jarring at first. You know, you're coming into a very well-oiled machine where everybody has been doing this and they know how it's done and they know how they like to do it and they want to get home and they want to get to lunch, you know. And so you come in to play the boss at the company for one episode or whatever, you've got to really, you know, sort of grab the reins for yourself and make some very positive choices for yourself. And but it's, you know, that first day is very jarring. You just have to really hold on tight to yourself and believe in your choices. And but yeah, it's never not awkward, I would say.
The thing about working for a longer time on a show, it's like more like being in a play. In a right. sense, you get to be part of the family. You get to form those relationships, many of which I'm sure, like you and like myself, you know, I have actor friends that I made friendships years ago on sets, sure. and you carry those things through. But if you're in and out in a day or two, it's harder to do that. And that's part of the joy of the business, you know, is making those kinds of relationships. So it really is a different sort of mentality and an adjustment that each actor has to make.
Absolutely. And, you know, with a play, you get sometimes 6 weeks of rehearsal and you get to know everybody and you get to ask a lot of questions about your character and, you know, where he comes from and what his family is like. And, you know, and all of that informs you and helps and relaxes you. And with television, it's just moves so fast and there's so much money involved and they have to move at a certain pace and you just have to jump in and fly.
Yeah, and episodic, you know, it really was an adjustment coming, as all of us do. I mean, most actors, I think, start in the theater, at least to some degree, even if it's only college theater. So as you say, we're used to coming out of a rehearsal process and maybe having getting to bend the ear of the director or the director interfacing directly with us about right. our character. And so often in TV, because it does move so fast, the you know, many times, depending on who the director is, the director may only talk to the actors other than maybe the leads in the series. He may only talk to the other actors if he doesn't like what they're doing.
Exactly.
So if you're looking for that positive feedback, you know, it's often not there. The positive feedback is they didn't tell you you did something wrong, you know.
So, exactly.
So and that's kind of an adjustment to make. Well, that, you know, that brings me to a great show I want to talk about. I've been interviewing you has given me the great excuse to catch up on episodes of Treme.
Yes.
Which is a great show. Now, this is a show, you came into the show in, what, the third season?
The third season,
is that right?
Exactly.
Now, about what's that so like? This is a great ensemble cast, great writing, great directing. Now, yeah. they certainly already had everything established. So, and your character is a real estate developer. How has that been to work your way into that group?
Well, you know, I've been telling people this a lot lately. I always find that it's the most relaxing atmosphere when everybody is really, really good at their job.
Yeah.
You know, and Treme is like that. You know, everybody is so smart and so talented. And they're collaborators, you know, they're not bosses. They've all got their sleeves rolled up and they ask me questions and I can ask them questions and, you know, they'll say this take, you know, how do you want to do it? Do you want to try something different? And, you know, I always find that's when everybody's really smart and creative. I always find that's the most relaxing.
Right. Take us behind the scenes a little bit. How do they shoot Treme? Is it a one camera show or do they shoot multiple cameras at the same time? So they don't necessarily have to do setups that way or how do they work?
It's a one-camera show, and they do a lot of you know, Steadicam shots, and they're all like shooting a little movie.
Right.
It's all, you know, all on location mostly. You know, we shoot all over New Orleans in restaurants and parks and offices and bars and nightclubs and.
Well, that's the thing that's so brilliant about the show is that the city really is a character in the show.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I was just thinking, last night. I think I'm gaining weight just by watching these episodes. You know, my wife is a Cajun, so I am not unfamiliar with Cajun cooking and what it can do to the waistline.
Oh,
but
man.
But it's the city of New Orleans is such a character in the show. Do they shoot as much night work as it looks like, or is that just filmmaking trickery?
No, they do. They shoot a lot of stuff at night because, you know, New Orleans is so wild at night. They shoot a lot of stuff in clubs and, you know, jazz venues and streets. But yeah, the food is like no other food in the world. I always leave with my pants not fitting.
Well, I'm more and more familiar with that. Trust me, as you get older, it doesn't get any easier.
No, and it starts with, you know, in New Orleans, it starts with breakfast.
That's right.
Biscuits with real butter and, you know, gravy and griots and grits. And
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, tell us about your character. You play,
Will.
Yeah, I went back to Brothers and Sisters there for a minute. Yeah. I don't know if you can tell me or not, or maybe you don't even know, but Will Branson.
Yes, yeah.
Good guy, or do we know yet?
Well, that's the thing. It's like that's what makes David Simon such a genius. And you saw the same thing with The Wire. You meet these people in these shows, and you feel like you're supposed to trust them. And then they say one thing, and you think, oh, man, am I not supposed to trust this person anymore? And then you start to trust them again, and I think Will Branson is very much like that. I think, you know, he's trying to build a music venue in New Orleans and sort of capitalize on the money that's coming back into the city after Hurricane Katrina. And but sort of where he ends up is to be revealed in the next season, and I'll be killed if I just
I got you. I got you. Well, then let's backtrack a little bit. How did you come to the role in Tremé? Was this from a past relationship, a producer, a director who knew your work, or was it an audition or what?
It's just strictly an audition, and I auditioned for it right before Christmas, and I just figured that it went away. And then about the middle of the next, you know, about 4 weeks later in January at some time, they called and said, get on a plane for New Orleans. And I felt like I'd won the lottery.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Now, did you know at that time that the character would extend past one season into the next season?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, that's got to be a nice little treat then as well.
Yeah.
So at this point, you may not know how long this run will go.
Well, I think from what I know, the season is wrapping up. The show is wrapping up this season. So
you mean they're going to cease production? I guess I didn't know that. People probably know that. I'm out of the loop, but I hate to hear that.
That's what I'm reading. So
shows like this are too good to go away like that. They should keep going. There's such a blend.
On the one hand, I agree with that. And on the other hand, you know, I respect David Simon so much, and he has a certain story he wants to tell.
Well, there you go.
He knows when he's done telling it and how much he wants to say, and you got to respect that.
Well, you know, if that's the reason, then I absolutely respect that. If it's a, you know, if it's a matter of audience or something else, then I would say I hope not, because it's on HBO.
Right.
And, you know, it's certainly been so well reviewed and such a good show for their reputation as a content creator of high quality work that are not creator, but a distributor. You know, I would hope they would keep it around as long as the producers wanted to do it. But if it's, you know, if it's the producers on their terms, then you do have to respect that. Absolutely.
Exactly.
The thing that strikes me about the show, and you do want to leave it at a high level. You don't want to extend a show out, especially one that's so good, so that you look back and say, yeah, we should have ended it back here because it's not as good as it was.
Exactly.
What I get from when I watch Tremé, and I've watched a number of episodes in a row now, catching up, like I say, there's just no false steps. The acting is all good. The directing, the writing, the cinematography, I mean, it just works. And the blend of music and food and New Orleans and all the multiple storylines is really brilliant.
I totally agree. The thing I hear most is that it feels like a documentary, which I think is such a compliment, you know. And I also think that's what's so relaxing about working on it, is They are very interested in the truth and not any kind of acting, really. You know, I think they really want you, they really want everything to be sort of grounded and truthful. You know, that's a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, what's so interesting, too, about the business and then moving away from Treme a little bit, but New Orleans has become a real center of production, much to the chagrin of those of us in Texas. We really had a great thing going here for a long time, and a lot of that work that we used to have in Texas has moved to Louisiana because of the tax incentive situations.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's really a changing landscape, even since you've been in the business quite a while. But it once was that you either went to New York or Los Angeles or perhaps Chicago if you wanted to work professionally.
Sure.
And now because there's so much production all over the country, that's really not necessarily true. People can have careers in regional markets now. And so the whole landscape for an actor really has changed a lot in the last 10 years, or even the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And for, you know, for an LA actor like me, it's so nice to be able to get out of town every once in a while, because there was a long stretch where that wasn't happening at all. You know, I remember I worked on Walker, Texas Ranger in the 90s in Dallas. And
yep.
And that was really fun to be able to just live in another city and see another city and another meet different people and everything like that. And then there was just this long stretch where I was I didn't leave LA for years.
Yeah.
So it's not. It's a nice new thing that's happening.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I'm going to have to let you go pretty soon, but I wanted to talk about another project that you have upcoming, or that you finished, but it hasn't been released yet. And I believe it was also shot in Louisiana. That's a film called 12 Years a Slave.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that project? It's a very intriguing project, a script based on a text that, as I understand it, I believe was written about 1840, 1850, somewhere around there.
12 Years a Slave is just really one of the best scripts I've ever read in my life, and I read a lot of scripts. It's an account. It's from a book by the same name, written by a man named Solomon Northup, who was a free black man in the mid-1800s, northerner, educated, who was drugged and kidnapped and sold into the South, into slavery. And, you know, he was an educated man, so he could read and write. So he just kept trying for years to get a letter to somebody to tell him he had a wife and kids up in Saratoga Springs, New York, and tried to get a letter to somebody to let them know where he was. And it's an extraordinary story. And he wrote the book. And it's Michael Fassbender and Chiwetel Ejiofor and Brad Pitt, and directed by this brilliant British director named Steve McQueen. So I'm really, really excited about it. We shot in a place called Vacherie, Louisiana, which is about on the way to Baton Rouge from New Orleans.
Yeah. Was there any connection of how you got that project because you were working in Louisiana? Or, I mean, did that help at all? Or was it completely unrelated?
It was that job was sort of, I was sort of recommended by some people that I, you know, had worked with on Treme, but I certainly still had to read for it and everything like that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a great project. How it's really funny. You have a British director named Steve McQueen.
I know.
I'm old enough to, Steve McQueen to me is a guy that jumped over the fence in The Great Escape on a motorcycle, you know.
Me too. Or away from the island in Papillon.
Exactly. Or drove the Mustang and Bullet. Yeah. Or all those. So, yeah, I mean, that's Steve McQueen. So this is it's interesting. I don't know if it's true in this case, but let me posit this, and you could tell me if I'm off base or not, but this is an American story, but you have a European director coming at it, and it seems so often that works.
Isn't that amazing?
I think it works because they have a perspective where they're not too close to the story or something. They can see it.
Not too precious with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at someone like Ang Lee, who does Brokeback Mountain, and then before that, The Ice Storm, you know, which is, you know, 70s Connecticut, and, you know, here's this incredible Chinese director, and now Life of Pi. I mean, like, you know, he never repeats himself ever, and it's never a story from his homeland, you know?
Right.
It's incredible. I agree with you, though. I think it's a really fresh perspective when someone it doesn't come from that part of the world.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I go back, I guess the first time I noticed it was when, you know, one of my very favorite movies is Tender Mercies. And Bruce Beresford directed that, you know, and you would have thought he was a Texan.
Exactly.
You know, but no, but he just got it so much that it's really interesting to see that. And I don't know if it's, you know, what it is, but there's something about perspective that a quote unquote outsider, not meaning that in a pejorative way, can see a piece of material in a way that maybe some of us who are in the States on some of these stories that might deal with hot button issues like slavery or racism or those kind of things, that someone else standing off a bit can see it from a different angle that really brings out some light and truth to the situation.
Absolutely. Or you look at someone like Kazuo Ishiguro, I think is his name. I think he's a Japanese man who wrote Remains of the Day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the most British, you know.
Yeah.
Stories ever, and finally directed by Merchant Ivory. But it's like, I think that's true, and I think it's really interesting that.
Well, when is 12 Years a Slave to be released, or do you know yet?
You know, I have no idea. I think it'll probably be at the end of this summer, probably. I know one of his last movies went to the Toronto Film Festival, which maybe they'll do that again. But to be honest, I just have no idea. I'm just so happy to be a part of it.
Right, well, I bet. Now, are you waiting to go back to work on Tremé, or are you wrapped on that?
I'm all done.
Oh.
Yep. Shot the season finale.
Wow. Yep. Well, you know, that's a great arrow to have in your quiver.
Absolutely. So. And to, you know, it's a cliche, but you really do learn from everyone you work with, and to work with all those people who are so smart and so talented. I mean, the woman who directed the season finale is Agnieszka Holland. She's a Polish film director who did Europa.
Oh,
and
gosh, yeah.
She's just, to get to work with her was a dream. It was a pleasure all around.
Well, what's next for you in terms of what's coming out of things that you've already completed? Is it 12 Years a Slave, or is it the Anna Nicole story, or
I
what?
I don't know. Neither of those have gotten release dates yet, but I'm sure they'll both be this year. But right now it's pilot season in Los Angeles,
right.
which is when they're casting all the new shows.
Sure.
So got lots of auditions and just looking for my next job.
Yeah.
The life of an actor.
Well, that is indeed the life of an actor, and it sort of goes on, and at least you hope so.
Exactly.
Well, listen, Jay, I don't want to abuse your time. I really do appreciate you coming on Actors Talk Podcast. It's been a treat to talk to you, and especially about the projects that you've been working on, Tremé, 12 Years a Slave. I watched some interview footage of you that some other people had done online, and you're a very likable guy and a good actor, and I can see why you're working a lot, and it's been a real pleasure to get to talk to you.
Oh, Tommy, I really appreciate it. This was really such a pleasure.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And again, for the audience, this is Jay Hughley, and watch for him on Tremé and upcoming in 12 Years a Slave.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Take care, and God bless you. I hope to talk to you again.
You too.
All right. Thanks, man. Take care.
All right.
Well, once again, thank you so much to Jay Hughley. That was a terrific time I had speaking with him. We spoke, of course, as I always do, via Skype. He was in Los Angeles. I'm here in Austin, Texas. And, you know, we had a pretty good connection for this episode, and I thought the sound turned out very, very well. Thank you, Skype. I appreciate your cooperation very much. Hey, if you haven't been there, go to the ActorsTalkPodcast.com website and become a subscriber, and that way you'll keep up with all the goings-on here. I want to thank our friends at ShortFilmTexas.com. ShortFilmTexas.com is a wonderful website, especially if you are anywhere in the Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, anywhere in the Southwest, and you're doing a short film or a feature film, whether it's union or non-union. It's a great place to go for casting and crewing up. ShortFilmTexas.com. And they carry the Actors Talk Podcast, and I want to thank them for doing that, because a lot of you folks listening have found us through shortfilmtexas.com. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate your support. Well, until next time, that's going to be it. Please drop me a line or an email, tommy@actorstalkpodcast.com, or you could give me a voicemail if you're in the States, 877-518-2530. 877-518-2530. Or if you are not in the States, you can use my Google number. That's 512-660-7160. 510-660-510. 512-660-7160. Okay, it's getting late. I admit it. Thank you so much. God bless you all. Thank you. Hope to see you in the movies. Until next time, this is Tommy G. Kendrick saying so long.